welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, in the second hour of today's show, I'm very honoured to be able to bring you a new guest to Truth News Radio, Chris Graham, a journalist with a quite an impressive track record in Australia, reporting on really important cutting-edge stories around the country. Chris Graham, the managing editor and founder of Tracker magazine, owned by the New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council, former and founding editor of the National Indigenous Times. And Chris has won a Walkley Award for excellence in Indigenous affairs reporting and a Walkley High Commendation, and has twice been awarded the Human Rights Award for his Indigenous affairs reporting. Now, I was lucky enough to attend a lecture Chris gave about a year ago that went into a very, very convoluted and disturbing and a story that really highlights the problems that we have with the media in Australia. And it really was the type of story that is intrinsic to what we talk about here on Truth News. And ever since that, I've really been wanting to get back to this, and I've now managed to get Chris on the line for the full hour of the second hour of today's show. Chris, welcome to Truth News Radio.
Thanks, Harold. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, look, it's really great to have you on. And, you know, look, just for our listeners, I'll give you my brief preamble of what I remember from that night, and I've actually reviewed some of your writing again since then. Chris, you exposed classic case of media disinformation, which appears to be tied to political agendas, from the ABC, the national broadcaster, the broadcaster that we pay for with our tax money, which has, you know, in its charter, at a very deep level, it was founded to create a voice of independence and balance and truth and factual-oriented reporting. And what you uncovered in the ABC series of Late Line episodes, I believe in around about 2003, 2004, on the Northern Territory sexual scandals, sexual violence, and claims of pedophilia and sexual slavery were really, really shocking stories. They were stories that were worthy of A Current Affair or 60 Minutes. They were incredibly sort of stories that get people very worked up. But of course, because they were on the ABC, everyone would think, well, this must be 100% factual. It must be true. And of course, a lot happened at that time with the government basically launching the Northern Territory intervention, huge changes to the laws, and changes that are still, we get the cascade of effects from that, from the intervention. We've had a number of things of which have actually almost become permanent now in Australia, like welfare quarantining and various things. But anyway, look, that's just my background to it. Chris, could you just give us a little bit of a background about that period in your life and what you researched and what you came up with? I'd love to know more about everything you've been doing, but I thought we might just focus on that for now.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, look, it was 2006 was when Late Line started reporting just out of nowhere, really. They had a real intense focus on sexual violence in Aboriginal communities, in particular in Northern Territory Aboriginal communities. And you hit the nail on the head. The way that the reporting was done was straight out of the playbook of A Current Affair or Today Tonight.
Yeah.
But exactly as you say, because it was on the ABC, people were more prone to believe it, and they let the stories wash over them a lot more than they might have if it was on a commercial network. And you know, I must admit to being quite naive at the time as well. I did trust the ABC as a source of news. I knew that it wasn't perfect, but I never knew it would get up to something like this. And when we started looking into the story, to say it fell apart really doesn't quite do it justice. The story, there are aspects of truth throughout the story. And look, sexual violence is a problem in some Aboriginal communities, just as it's a problem in some non-Aboriginal communities. So aspects of their claims are true, but the specific claims that they make, almost every single one of them is is demonstrably false, and in some cases spectacularly false. You know, they embellish the story so much that people who were portrayed one way in the story were not who they claimed to be. Other people in the story had information that they withheld that would have decimated their version of events. There was political interference, and ultimately, when it all blew up, Lateline, what really was quite shocking was not just what Lateline did, but what the ABC did in order to avoid having to face any consequence for their practices being exposed. That was, for me anyway, I mean, it was shocking what they got up to in a journalistic sense, but the way the ABC responded to it in a corporate sense was really what not only shocked me at the time, but what has, you know, 6 years on, convinced me that the ABC should not be trusted. There's individuals within the ABC that I trust, but as a news organisation, I don't trust them at all these days.
As an organisation, it really makes you worry about you've got to think about all the other things that they're doing, all the other subjects that they're reporting on, and sort of taking a leading role in giving us so-called trustable information.
Yeah, and look, I should probably have given you the background. I was the editor of the National Indigenous Times, based in Canberra, when this all broke. And the National Indigenous Times, it had a reputation for quite aggressive journalism. We were a very campaigning style of newspaper, but we were frequently critical of mainstream media, much less so the ABC. Frequently critical of government and very pro-Aboriginal rights. And we never pretended really to be anything else. But I was editing the National Indigenous Times when we broke the story, and you know, it changed the course of the paper. It changed the course of my career. It's still reverberating 6 years on. It's one of those stories, you know, in journalistic terms, that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
But in a professional sense, it's very disturbing.
Just for our international audience, I mean, a lot of our listeners to this show are actually in the US, and I thought I probably just need to highlight what the Northern Territory intervention actually is. I mean, you're probably better equipped to do that than me. Why don't you just maybe sort of run through the sort of aftermath of all this reporting, what actually happened in the Northern Territory?
Well, they used the story that I suppose you and I'll go into shortly. The government used that story and a couple of others filed by the ABC Lateline to launch what was, in every sense of the word, an invasion of Aboriginal communities in the Northern Territory. They literally sent in the army to 73 prescribed, as they called them, Aboriginal communities. Land was compulsorily acquired back from Aboriginal people. The Prime Minister of Australia threatened that compulsory sexual health checks would be conducted on children.
Wow.
People's welfare entitlements were quarantined. 50% of them were quarantined. They also said they would do things like direct, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars towards new construction of housing. As that subsequently turned out, I think they'd spent $150 million at one point without constructing a single home. It just became a free-for-all for non-Aboriginal contractors. But they gave Star Chamber powers to the Australian Crime Commission to force and compel Aboriginal people to give evidence. It was an extraordinary assault on the rights of Aboriginal people, and an assault that has never been directed against any other citizen of Australia in the history of our nation. Nobody ever has been subjected to these sorts of powers, not before and not since. Only Aboriginal people are subject to this. So it was an extraordinary government policy, and it was a story that unsurprisingly was reported around the world. And as it subsequently transpired, was based entirely on fabrication. That's not to suggest, as I said, there isn't sexual violence. There is, but nowhere near at the levels alleged by the ABC and others. And the story itself, you know, bore no resemblance to truth.
To the actual facts, yeah.
Yeah, and it was ridiculous.
Can I just ask, are the policies of the intervention still in force now, or have they been scaled down at all?
The government will tell you today in 2013 that they have been scaled down. They haven't really. They've just been renewed for another 10 years. They've tweaked some aspects of it, but essentially, no, Aboriginal people face the same laws and discrimination that they faced in 2007. And it's worth noting for your international listeners, we don't have a Bill of Rights in Australia. We have Racial Discrimination Act, which is an act of Parliament, so it can be changed any time the Parliament of Australia deems appropriate. And that is what happened on this occasion. When they passed the legislation to enable the army to go into Aboriginal communities, they exempted that legislation from the Racial Discrimination Act. And the only reason you exempt something from the Racial Discrimination Act is if you intend to do something that is racist. It's happened two other times in Australia's history, and on every one of those occasions, it was used against the interests of Aboriginal people. So the suspension of Aboriginal rights certainly wasn't unprecedented in Australian political history, but the way in which it was done and the use of the army absolutely was unprecedented.
Yeah, and another aspect of this that I find, you know, particularly disturbing is the way some of the provisions that were brought in with the intervention are now being actually continued and rolled out all around the country, and one of them is welfare quarantining. And as I understand it, the plan of the current government, and bear in mind, the current government is not the same political party as the government that brought in the intervention. So this crosses the divide between political parties. Again, another indicator that we do have a big problem with our, I believe, with our democracy in Australia. This policy of welfare quarantining is just so, it just seems so wicked on so many levels. I mean, what's your take on it?
Look, it's one of those policies that would only ever be directed against a minority of people in the Australian community, and a minority that really has no voice. So Aboriginal people were the lab rats for welfare quarantining, and that's a policy where your basic welfare entitlements are literally quarantined. They're 50% of your entitlement is placed on what's called a basics card, and that basics card can only be used in certain stores in certain ways to buy certain products. They've said that they're rolling it out across Australia, but as we sit today, 99.9% of the people affected by welfare quarantining are Aboriginal people, and they only really rolled it out across Australia because the United Nations condemned the policy and pointed out that it was racially discriminatory because it targeted one race. So they've expanded it in theory to target the whole of the Australian community, but in practice, of course, it really still targets overwhelmingly targets Aboriginal people.
So the places where it's being rolled out are places that have higher concentrations of Aboriginal people. Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay, we're just going to break. Chris, we're just going to break. You with Truth News Radio Australia, talking to Chris Graham about the Northern Territory intervention and the bias and corruption within the ABC. Really important show. We'll be right back after this break. Please don't go away. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, my guest today is Chris Graham, a Walkley Award-winning journalist from Australia with a long history of reporting on Indigenous affairs in Australia. And we're getting into this scandal over the ABC's reporting of sexual violence and alleged sexual slavery in Northern Territory's communities, which took place around about the middle of the noughties in 2005-2006. Now, Chris, actually, I'll just point out your articles are available on your website, Chris Graham. I'll just quickly get that up. ChrisGrahamAtLarge.com. That's ChrisGrahamAtLarge, all one word, .com. Yeah. And all of your articles and materials are there. And, of course, the article that particularly covers this story is called Bad Auntie. And I did have a read of that last night. I went right through it. And I recommend anyone listening tonight to actually have a read of it. It's quite a long and detailed story. And, you know, it has so many twists and turns in it. And, you know, just one thing I've found, and I'd like, you know, you'd like you to actually step us through it.
Sure.
But one thing I've found interesting is that you know, you're pretty honest about this. And you're not denying that there is this problem with violence in Aboriginal communities. There is a problem with sexual violence. But what's actually happened here is it seems that the ABC has taken on the role of creating a narrative. What I suspect is that their producers and the people who create these shows think, well, we'll just turn it into a story that suits us, and it doesn't really matter if we bend the truth around, as long as it projects the right idea. And maybe they even justified it to themselves by saying, well, this type of thing probably happened. You know, we're just in embellishing it. I don't know, but
yeah.
I think that's exactly what
occurred. I think if the people responsible for this story were asked to justify it, they will concede now, I think, that there were substantial problems of fact with the story, but they would justify it by saying, but the broader issue is accurate, and that is sexual violence is a problem. Well, it is, but that does not excuse this style of journalism, and it doesn't excuse what followed, which was the government's Northern Territory intervention. And governments can only bring in policies like that impact so badly on a group of people with the assistance of media, and that is exactly what the ABC did. Would never get away with a policy like this if it wasn't for media. So, you know, and that's the opposite role of the media.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's just step through what the sequence of events was.
Sure. The story called Sexual Slavery Reported in Indigenous Community, it was broken by Lateline on June 21, 2006, but it was preceded by another story about 6 weeks earlier about cases of sexual violence in Aboriginal communities. Now, that story caused a massive media interest in sexual violence in Aboriginal communities. Prior to that, media just really weren't interested in the story, despite the fact that Aboriginal men and women had been yelling for decades for assistance on this. But anyway, the media discovers the story in mid-early 2006. Lateline then follows up its own reporting with the story Sexual Slavery Reported in Indigenous Community. And the story focused on the community of Mutitjulu, which is literally in the shadow of Ayers Rock. They're the traditional owners of Ayers Rock, that famous Australian iconic outback scene. Essentially, the story alleged that men in the community of Mutitjulu were creating an environment where a predatory paedophile was able to sexually abuse Aboriginal children. He was exchanging petrol for sex with young children, and people within that community were going to other communities and stealing children and then holding them against their will and using them as sex slaves. That was the central theme of the story. And as we mentioned earlier, Harriet, it just when we began to look at it, it completely, utterly collapsed. One of the chief witnesses in the story was a man who ABC Late Line described as an anonymous youth worker. His face was blacked out from the screen and his voice was digitised to protect his identity. He made all sorts of extraordinary claims. He was the one who made the claim about children being taken from other communities and held as sex slaves. He made claims about women coming to meetings with broken arms and screwdrivers hanging out of their legs.
Yeah.
He made all sorts of spectacular claims. And he claimed that when he worked in the community as a youth worker, every incident of sexual violence he saw against women or children, he reported to the police and nothing was done. We subsequently looked into who the anonymous youth worker was, and he wasn't a youth worker at all, had never worked as a youth worker. He was, in fact, a very senior official in the federal government's Department of Indigenous Affairs, and he was advising the then minister, Mal Brough, directly on the issue of sexual violence in Aboriginal communities. So his identity was totally, utterly falsified, and not by him, it was actually done by ABC Late Line. They now admit that they came up with the name Anonymous Youth Worker. They've since claimed it was to protect his identity because he was at risk of harm. Their claims that you know, any reasonable investigation show are utterly, demonstrably false. But so their main witness collapsed spectacularly. I mean, his claims about all of the incidents of violence he saw against women and children he reported to police also collapsed. It subsequently emerged, police later revealed, while he was in that community, he never made a single report of sexual violence to police. We looked into his background further, and it turns out he gave evidence to a Senate inquiry a few months before this story, where he falsely claimed that he lived in the community for 9 months. This guy actually lived in a resort about 30 kilometres away in the shadow of the rock. It's like comparing Beverly Hills to, you know, the poorest parts of the US. He just did not live in an Aboriginal community. He made all sorts of other claims that collapsed as well, but he was their most important witness. He was the person on which they based the headline and much of the reporting, and it turned out they completely fabricated his identity. The other crucial witness in the story was a doctor who did work in the community for a period of time. Now, he backed the central claim in the story that men in the community were creating environments where this alleged pedophile was able to prey on vulnerable children. What he didn't disclose in the program was that as the local doctor, he had been prescribing this alleged pedophile, who was aged in his late 60s, Viagra for quite a few years, including 7 months after he wrote in the man's notes, is using Viagra to have sex with young females.
Yeah, that's just an incredible, incredible fact.
Which, it was an extraordinary revelation. Yeah. One of those, I've been a journalist 20-something years, and I doubt I'll ever luck upon a revelation like that. That's spectacular, again, in terms of decimating the evidence of, you know, a doctor. We were leaked the man's health records, which was how we came to work out what had really happened. But contrary to the doctor's claims that men in the community had created the environment where this man was protected, it was actually the doctor who created the environment where this man was allegedly able to abuse children. I should say there's absolutely no evidence that he ever did.
Right.
And in fact, there is. It is now accepted that the man was forced out of the community for preying on women, not children, but preying on women in the community. And I'm not suggesting this man wasn't a predator. I believe he was, but he wasn't. There's no evidence he was a pedophile, and there's evidence that he was chucked out by his community.
Yeah, and the behaviour of the doctor. Look, it says a lot of things to me that that I find extremely interesting, which I'd like to get into after the break. You're with Truth News Radio. We're talking about some very, very bizarre events that unfolded in the Northern Territory with Chris Graham. We'll be right back after the break. Don't go away.
Children come running to the truth, 'cause you got to to get the fruit. But why was living high another's grieving? But what's sweet by morning, bitter by the evening? Oh, what's sweet by morning, bitter by the evening?
Welcome back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be talking to you today. My name's Herewood Fenton, and you can find Truth News Radio at www.truthnews.com.au. And you can get all our podcasts, and you can look at our articles, and you can get in touch with us. And if you've got any interesting stories you'd like to tell us about, you're more than welcome to communicate, and I will get onto them. Today I'm talking to Chris Graham, award-winning journalist, and we're getting into this subject of the twisted and biased coverage and downright false inventions that were put into the ABC story on NT Northern Territory's communities, including allegations of sexual slavery and pedophilia. And this issue about the doctor having this alleged pedophile rapist on Viagra. You see, I actually think that it is quite plausible that that was the case. From what I know, and you know, part of what I do in this show is I'm looking into a lot of issues. A lot of it is to do with the pharmaceutical industry and the behaviour of doctors and the way in which our medical system is just geared towards getting people on drugs. And It's incredible and it's outrageous, but it is actually possible, I think, that that doctor just thought, well, I'll just put this guy on Viagra because that's what I do as a doctor. That's, you know, as a GP, I sit here writing prescriptions for people at the same time as he knew the guy was some kind of sexual deviant. I mean, did you manage to get deeper into the psychology of the doctor at all?
Look, we tried to interview him on a number of occasions, again, just recently, but for reasons that should be obvious, he's not my biggest fan.
Understandable.
Not interested in being interviewed. What the health notes show is that when he started this man on Viagra, the man started misusing it almost from the get-go. And yeah. The doctor, his name is Jeff Stewart, he expressed some concerns about how it was being used and he counselled the man on how to use Viagra properly. And then as it went on, he became increasingly concerned. Then he detailed his using Viagra to have sex with young female and then inexplicably continued to prescribe it for another 7 months until he finally cut this man off. He then leaves the community and subsequent doctors come into the community, ignore the warning on the front of this man's health record and continue to prescribe Viagra for another 2 or 3 years. Not only that, but this guy was doctor shopping across Central Australia and in Adelaide, seeking Viagra from wherever he could get it. You know, the health system failed absolutely spectacularly. One of the extraordinary things from a journalism sense is that we could never prove at the time that Lateline knew about this, but we can now prove that Lateline knew that doctors in the community were prescribing Viagra to the alleged pedophile against the wishes of the community. They got a leaked report, which they refer to, but only in part, which they broadcast in the program. They chose to leave out the section about the health system. God only knows why.
Right.
I think you're spot on earlier on, Herod, when you say they adopted a storyline and they decided they weren't going to depart from it. No matter what the facts said, they had a storyline. The storyline was Aboriginal men are creating an environment where children and women are being abused.
Yeah.
So that story they went with, even though they had leaked reports which told them something else entirely. And I should have prefaced all this by pointing out Lateline has since admitted that they never visited the community prior to airing the story. They did a 25-minute expose on the community of Mutitjulu without setting foot in the community of Mutitjulu. They used footage stitched from some historical Mutitjulu footage and some from regions which are 800 kilometres away, and they put it all together, mixed it up in Sydney, and presented it as an investigation in Mutitjulu, which it wasn't. They've since admitted that. You know, how they justified, I don't know.
Yeah, it just highlights the degree to which our media has just become what I call this an organ of propaganda.
Mm.
And I mean, from my research, this has happened on a lot of different other topics as well, and specifically with the Late Line program, and I'd love to talk with you about that at some time. But what do you think the state of our media is, and what do you think we can do about it?
Look, I think the most important thing people can do is be very selective where they get their media from, and use alternative sources of media like this program and like other programs. That's one of the really, really brilliant things about social media nowadays, and about the power of the internet, is the capacity of people to source their news from non-mainstream sources, from alternative media sources, and to be very discerning about it. That's not to say, you know, small independents don't get up to no good.
Yeah,
happens all over the place, but where it really happens on a scale that I think people really don't understand is within mainstream media and within organisations like the ABC in Australia and like the public broadcasters in America. They're not immune from it either. I mean, we all know how bad Fox News can be.
Yeah.
But that's not just for 1 minute that CNN or NBC are all that much better, or NBC or CBS or anything.
Well, and I would add BBC as well, because some of the biggest furfies I've seen have been from the BBC. But
look, they're amongst the worst. And,
yeah.
And that was a real epiphany for me. This story was what sparked that epiphany for me.
Yeah.
I've worked on the fringes of mainstream media pretty much all my career. So I've never really become part of the club. That wasn't by choice; it was just by luck. And as a result, I've been able to stay on the periphery now by choice, because I don't trust. I trust the mainstream media far less than the average conspiracy theorist, and work closely with the mainstream media. And I know how bad they are. They are. Look, I mean, we could talk about this all year, Harewood. It is. They are so dishonest that it beggars belief, and it is all about money, predominantly. But for non-commercial media like the ABC, it's about ego and about awards. That's been my experience, anyway. There's probably other things at play, but you know, I think you can't discount the ego of the average journalist.
Yeah, and I tend to think, you know, what you said about just diversity is probably the only solution. If we can have a diverse media with lots of independent, really real independent media, then there's just more choice. And I think that's happened. And I think that a lot of the bigger sort of corporate media is struggling to reclaim the audience that they had once, you know, before the rise of the internet. And, you know, they're trying with a whole lot of different tactics to get people back through blogging and social media and various sort of ways like that. But I would guess, you know, you'd be obviously concerned about any kind of attempts to restrict the freedom of the internet. I think that's probably our last bastion of freedom in this kind of struggle.
It is, and look, you know, if governments attempted, I think they would only do it with varying degrees of success. That said, they're quite successful in countries like China at censoring.
Indeed, yeah.
A great believer. Look, it's ironic, Harewood, and I never thought I would get to this point, certainly not 10 or 12 years ago. I'm a great believer in freedom of the internet. I'm not a great believer in freedom of the press, because I think press is so corrupt and so bad now that they are part of very much a part of the problem. But I do believe very strongly in freedom on the internet. You know, diversity is the only way I see people getting out of messuary. And Rupert Murdoch talked about, you know, modern media and the model of modern media not working anymore. And he was talking, of course, in a financial sense. I think it doesn't work in a much broader sense, and I think it hasn't worked for a very long time. And I think the decay you see in media, particularly in the US and to a lesser extent the UK and starting to set in Australia, is people, consumers, voting with their feet. Had a gutful of the behaviour of mainstream media, and they don't trust them much anymore as a source. That's not to say, you know, there are very successful channels like Fox News who attract specific audiences. But and, you know, niche media, I think, will flourish. But I think the collapse of the modern media model will be a boon for small, independent media and media practitioners and journalists and citizen journalists who have a story and have researched it well, and there are and their agenda is the truth.
Yeah, and also, you know, the smaller outfits like this one, like what I'm doing, we tend to be a bit more open about where we stand on issues. You know, we do have biases. I have certain conclusions about the world that I'm, you know, always sharing with people. But again, that tends to be lost as organisations get bigger. We're just going to break you with Truth News. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Truth News Radio. My name is Hereward Fenton. Great to be talking to you today. And my guest is Chris Graham. And we are talking about the corruption of media, the misrepresentation of some very important events that took place in Australia, in the Northern Territory. And I'd just like to return to that subject, Chris, if we may, just to sort of finish up what happened as a result of the ABC reporting, and if you could just maybe explain the government report that was released called, I believe, the Little Children Are Sacred report. If you could maybe just step through that, and we'll finish that off.
Yeah, sure. Look, as we discussed earlier, this story sparked a government policy called the Northern Territory Intervention. And the story actually literally sparked the Little Children Are Sacred report. The day after this story aired, the Northern Territory government announced the establishment of the six-month inquiry into sexual abuse in Aboriginal communities. The report that came from that was called Little Children Are Sacred. That report did discuss the issue of sexual violence and acknowledged that it was a problem in some Aboriginal communities. But its first recommendation of 90-plus recommendations was that any action by government should be in consultation with those affected by it, i.e. Aboriginal people. The federal government subsequently launched the NT intervention with zero consultation with Aboriginal people. They called a press conference about 3 hours after they received electoral advice telling them if they expected to win the next election, they needed to portray state and territory Labor governments as incompetent, and they needed to intervene in their affairs. So 3 hours later, after that document was received by the Liberal Party, they called a press conference, announced the Northern Territory intervention, which would intervene in the affairs of an incompetent Labor territory government.
I see. Yeah, yeah.
And the rest is history. Unfortunately, though, for the people affected by this government policy, attempt suicide and self harm rates in the Northern Territory, for example, have more than quadrupled since the launching of this policy. When it was rolled out, anemia rates in children spiked in some communities by 57%, and there were widespread reports of starvation of Aboriginal people who could not access their welfare entitlements anymore. School attendance across Aboriginal communities dropped. They wasted hundreds of millions of dollars on a housing program that hadn't delivered any houses in the first 2 years. They spent, I think it was about $500 million on a computer program to manage the welfare of 15,000 Aboriginal people. By any scale, it was an absolute unmitigated disaster. And look, dozens of Aboriginal people have died as a result of this policy. That's not reported in Australia.
Can I just point out one thing for our audience? I mean, Aboriginal people in Australia have the lowest standard of living probably of any people in a Western country anywhere in the world. I mean, it is very, very out of sync with the rest of our society. The levels of education, the poor diet, the overrepresentation of people in prisons, it all ties together with people that are just massively disadvantaged. And the to compound that with this kind of humiliating, domineering sort of approach, then it is to me symptomatic of a trend that is really, really, really dark in where governments are headed. Please continue.
I think that's right. And look, the statistics on Australian Aboriginal people, they genuinely beg a belief. Our national jailing rate of Aboriginal people is today 5.5 times greater. We jail black males at a rate 5.5 times greater than apartheid South Africa did at the end of apartheid. In Western Australia alone, it's 8.5 times greater than apartheid South Africa. The life expectancy of an Aboriginal man in a community called Wadair, which is in the Northern Territory, is 46 years of age, which is about the third worst on earth. The statistics are utterly staggering. I mean, when I was up researching this story, a 10-year-old boy suicided in an Aboriginal community. Last year, a 9-year-old girl suicided in a South Australian Aboriginal community. Youth suicide was unheard of in Aboriginal communities 30 years ago. So the outcome of this policy has been utterly devastating on Aboriginal people. It hasn't, though, been on the journalists and the doctors and the public servants involved in the story. The journalist who wrote this story, Suzanne Smith, became the online investigations editor for the ABC. No sanction against her whatsoever. The producer of the story, a man called Brett Evans, went on to be the executive producer of Media Watch, which, for those who don't know, is the ABC's program that exposes media misconduct. The doctor we talked about earlier, Dr. Jeff Stewart, went on to become the most senior doctor in the Northern Territory Aboriginal Health System. And Gregory Andrews, the anonymous youth worker, who was no anonymous youth worker at all, became the director of a non-government organisation aimed at assisting Aboriginal communities out of poverty. The Aboriginal characters in the story, though, Janara Garengareng, who was a whistleblower in the story, had her home raided. She was charged by police on a series of other issues not related to this story, which they discovered in the course of the raid, all related to leaking government information. She was bankrupted as a result of that story. Bob Randall, a very famous Australian Aboriginal man who actually lives half the year in the US, he had his home raided by police as well, as did another Aboriginal man in Mutajulu. So Aboriginal people paid an enormous price for this style of journalism, not only the people directly involved, but Aboriginal people subsequently who bore the brunt of the policy that followed this journalism. But no white fellas ever hung for any of this. It's, you know, they all escaped unscathed. The politicians got away unscathed, the journalists got away unscathed, and the doctor got away unscathed.
Yeah, and the government intervention continues.
It rolls on today. And look, it's one of those, you know, the same problem in the US where the so-called left and right of politics have essentially merged. I wouldn't say in the centre. I would say all over the shop, but they have bipartisan policies on these sorts of issues.
Yeah.
And the that they run are killing Aboriginal people and are creating the sorts of statistics that should shame Australia around the world. But we seem to just shrug it off as though, you know, it ain't our problem.
Actually exacerbating the problem. Like the solution to the problem is actually creating the problem, or at least making it worse. It's kind of this cycle that's just, it's the opposite of what it should be. And yeah. That's what I find incredible about the kind of mess that we've got ourselves into with, you know, with the benefit of hindsight and history. I mean, well, what's your take on the Labor Party's, you know, apology, the famous Kevin Rudd apology for the stolen generations? And I mean, what do you feel about that? Because I've done quite a bit of research into child removals that are occurring now as we speak. And of course, it's not just affecting Aborigines, it's affecting a lot of just poorer people across the spectrum. But as I understand it, child removals is still happening to a huge degree, despite this vaunted, you know, great apology for what happened 50 years ago. It's actually still going on.
Yeah, look, at a rate today much higher than it was for the era for which they've apologised. And the difference is, of course, it's all spin.
Yeah.
The difference is we apologised because back then we were open about the fact that we took Aboriginal children away from their families because we wanted to breed out the Aboriginal race. That was okay. A well-established government policy, and we were quite open about it. So that's what we apologise for. Today, of course, we're doing the same thing, but we call it something else. We say, well, it's for the good of those Aboriginal kids, knowing full well, of course, that government doesn't do anything much to alleviate the poverty and suffering of those communities. Of course, children who live in third world poverty are going to have third world problems.
Yeah.
Of course they are. And of course, they could benefit from removal. But the parents who live in those third world conditions have third world problems, and nothing is being done, or not enough is done to assist them. Instead, their children are taken away.
And another thing I find interesting is that foster carers are actually paid a substantial amount of money to do that job, which when a child's been removed from its family and that child comes from a very disadvantaged family, financially disadvantaged, and goes to, say, with a foster family, the foster family is actually getting a reasonably good remuneration for doing that. There's an economic incentive that I don't even fully understand. I don't quite understand how it works, but it's very odd.
Look, there is, and there's an industry to support here as well. And we were looking at this in the territory recently. I don't have the figures to hand, but they were spending something like $90 million a year on child removals of Aboriginal children in the Northern Territory. Of that million, 500,000 was allocated to assist the families in crisis. The other 89.5 million was spent on removals and bolstering the foster care system. So they don't actually direct the money to the problem. They direct the money to the industry that lives off the problem. And that is unfortunately government policy around the nation.
Yeah. It's this government that's out of control. In my understanding, it's the same problem with the media, because the media, having become so large, having become so concentrated, it's a corporatist media.
They both benefit from this, media and politics.
Yeah. Sorry, Chris, I think you might be just be getting cut off here by our music. I'll just mute it. You can finish up. We've got about 30 seconds left.
It's electorally popular to demonise poor and vulnerable people. It is also commercially popular to demonise poor and vulnerable people. So both politicians and journalists have a common interest in these sorts of policies, and that's why there is an enormous outrage when they're flooded. In fact, most people don't care, and most who do think it's great.
Absolutely, yeah. Look, it's been excellent talking to you, Chris. Good luck with everything, and I'll put up all of your references and notes on our website, and I'd love to have you back on sometime.
Thanks, Harry.
Thanks. Have a great night. You're with Truth News Radio. We're just finishing up. We'll be back next week. It's been great talking to you. See you next week.